Hey everyone, Sarah here. As you listen to our episodes recorded during the 2020 global pandemic, just a friendly reminder to check the date stamp on when that episode was released. And we'll also always tell you when it was recorded as well in the show notes and in the episode itself. Things change so quickly these days, including recommendations for health and safety, as well as just our own thoughts and feelings. So you may hear things that feel a bit dated if you're catching up on older episodes. Just know that we're experiencing this in real time, just like you, and that we're working really hard to follow the latest recommendations for the safety of our families and our communities. We're also working hard to bring you timely, relevant podcast episodes in a world that's changing really quickly. So just a reminder to listen with that context. Thanks for being here, friends. On to the episode.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 255 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
So I feel the need to say what day it is when we're recording. It is yeah. Sunday, April 5th, a couple days before this comes out and you all are hearing it. And that just feels kind of relevant right now. We've been trying to stay up to the minute with our episodes. But gosh, if you went back and listened to one of our episodes from just a couple weeks ago, it would sound super dated because we're dealing with something that's like rapidly unfolding right now.
It is. And I feel like this last month has been so strangely long and short at the same time. Yesterday, it feels like all of this started coming to a head. But at the same time, it feels like about 3 to 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. This month has been long and short. Time has no meaning. It's been really strange.
Yes, that is so true. And so we are making an effort to kind of point out when we're recording this, both in the episode and in the show notes. And, you know, if you are the type of listener who likes to catch up listen in the future to older episodes, I think that will still work. Today, we're doing listener questions. I think, you know, these are parenting topics that will continue to live on. And at the same time, I just feel some kind of responsibility to orient you all in time because, yeah, a couple of weeks ago in March, we were, you know, sharing stories about what things were like in our communities. And that's totally different now. So it is
right.
It's important, I think.
We're all learning in real time along with everybody else. So, So I think that it's good. And hopefully things won't change much more in our communities in the near future. But we really don't know at this point. So it's all emerging.
It is emerging. And so today we are taking listener questions. Thanks to everybody who called them in, left your voicemails. We have a couple that have to do with the current global pandemic situation and a couple that don't. And I think all four have takeaways that, you know, will extend beyond this time. So it's one of our favorite things to do is to answer your listener questions. So we will jump right into those after the break.
Sarah, I don't know about you, but right now I can barely keep track of what day it is. And it's really taking a toll on some of my beauty and health routines.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Well, we are welcoming back our sponsor, Dermatology, today. And all I can say is I'm glad I started a regular skincare routine before all this went down because now I don't even have to think about it. Dermatology is spelled without vowels, so that's Dermtlgy. And I bet you've seen their products pop up in your social media feeds, but if you're not familiar, these are medical-grade skincare products that are made with pure, safe, clinically proven ingredients.
Dermatology has created a self-care starter kit for our listeners, and it's perfect if you're ready to up your skincare game, but maybe you're not out shopping the way you used to be, or you just need someone to make it really easy for you. The bundle comes with four full-size products, a cleanser, a serum, a sunscreen, and a retinol complex, and they're all designed to be used together. Dermatology has marked the package all the way down to $99 with free shipping just for our listeners, which is a fantastic deal, especially for these kind of high quality products.
You know, it's warming up here in Southern California, and I am loving the Daily Sunscreen Moisturizer so much. It goes on really smooth and it doesn't mess with any of my other products, you know, on those days where I do decide to put a little makeup on top of it.
Yeah, I really love the anti-aging serum. I have been putting it on at night, and it just feels like one little thing I can do for myself before I crash. So again, it's $99 for a cleanser, a sunscreen, an anti-aging serum, and a retinol complex, all of which adds up to $175 normally, and you get free shipping on top of that. Head to themomhour.com/skincare, and it's super easy to order the bundle right from there. Again, themomhour.com/skincare will take you right to Dermatology's special offer for our listeners. So check it out.
Megan, it feels like the way we do everything has changed lately, and I find myself wanting to support small businesses as much as I can. And at the same time, that's confusing because it's not like I can head out and browse my local boutiques, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And you all know how much we love our affiliate partner, Jane.com. It's a daily deals marketplace that curates sales from boutique sellers at really, really good prices. Well, turns out shopping Jane is a really easy way to support small businesses, many of them mom-owned small businesses.
Yes, I was shopping Jane.com for some Easter and birthday gift stuff recently, and I noticed a whole page on their site talking about how they're working with their sellers during the COVID-19 crisis. They're really championing small businesses right now, making sure prices stay fair, and they're even helping get medical supplies where they're needed and donating proceeds from certain products to help local communities that are hit hard by the pandemic.
I love that. And I love knowing that when I shop Jane, I'm buying directly from a small business owner while I'm also staying at home, of course. And we're part of Jane's affiliate program, which means that if you shop through our link, you'll be helping support the podcast at no additional cost to you. Head to themomhour.com/Jane to start shopping on your phone or your browser. Again, it's themomhour.com/Jane. Okay, so our first question today is from Allison, and she's got a question that I think is heavy on so many people's minds right now, and that is working from home with young kids, which is challenging no matter when, but now it's like everybody has to do it all at once, which has created, I think, new challenges and some opportunities. So here's Allison's question.
Hey, Megan and Sarah. My name is Allison, and I live in Norton, Massachusetts. I love your show. My question today has to do with quarantining and working from home with young children. Do you have any advice for managing the day-to-day of working from home while also taking care of a 1 and a 3-year-old, 3 pets, trying to keep the house somewhat clean, and not pulling your hair out in the process? Because at this point, I may have no hair left at the end of all of this. Thank you.
Okay, Allison, like, we are so here with you. Sarah and I have both worked from home with, you know, various ages of small children, babies, toddlers. And I think the one biggest takeaway I had, especially at the age of your kids, is that I kind of had this idea that I could balance every day, that like each day I should come to the end of it and feel like I had spent enough time on the kids, enough time on work, enough time on the house, enough time on self-care and myself and my relationships and all those things. And I think what I finally realized after many years of struggle and having an expectation that just wasn't realistic is that balance really looks more like over a month than a day or even a week sometimes. So you will have days when it seems like all you're doing is like tossing snacks at the kids while you're doing a conference call or hiding in the closet to place the call. And then there's going to be other days when you can walk away from the computer for a while and where you can pay closer attention to what's going on in your house. And then maybe you're going to have a day when you can spend tons of time cleaning, or you'll have these little bursts of energy that you didn't see coming when you can get a lot of household stuff done. So just, I guess, give yourself a pass and realize that trying to fit 2 or 3 jobs, you know, running the household, taking care of your kids and doing your job all into one day, every day, all at once, with no training, no easing in, just like all of a sudden this is your reality. That is a big undertaking and probably not really possible for anyone to do well every single day.
Yeah, I love that. I love that advice. And the first thing that came to mind for me was lower your standards. And then when you think you've lowered your standards, give yourself a real gut check and probably lower them again. Now, this is kind of like, I think sometimes we get the wrong impression when you hear lower your standards, because we want to be good moms. We want to be good at our jobs. And actually having high standards can sometimes be an asset. Like, I am someone who holds myself to high standards, and sometimes that helps keep me sane and functioning. So I don't mean let it all go and don't care about anything. But I think sometimes, especially if you have an achiever personality, you have to work hard to push back against yourself and say, is this really necessary? We're facing this enormous global challenge that nobody's ever dealt with before. So I think we have to, I think that little voice that says, is this really necessary today? Like, is the way I did things before, by having, you know, less screen time or nutritious snacks, is it mission critical? So that would be my one thing, is to just like invite that little like person on your shoulder to just question that at every turn. Is there a way I can let myself off the hook here? And keep asking that question.
Because Sarah, not to interrupt you, but I think that it's really important to keep in mind that this is going to end. Mm-hmm. It might not be, you know, in 2 weeks, but even if it's 4 months, like let's pretend like worst case scenario, this is reality for 4 months. And I haven't heard anyone project that, but I'm just throwing that out there. What is the worst that could happen if in 4 months, these things don't get done? Your kids right. have more screen time. Your house falls apart a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So to your point, it's not only even just like lowering your standards, but this is a short term lowering of your standards. Mm-hmm. It's not forever.
It is. Yeah, exactly. Another suggestion I was going to have is because I am very routine oriented and that helps me in a lot of ways, but it can mean that I have a hard time thinking of new routines or thinking that I could do something differently. So you may want to consider what your day looks like. And it sounds like it's been stressful. It sounds like it's not working the way you want it to. And think of possible chunks of time in your day that maybe in the past you would never have used for work or for cleaning or for cuddling with your kids. But now perhaps this block of time maybe makes the most sense. So if you are mm-hmm. someone who never worked at night because you prefer to like have your glass of wine and watch your show like I do, you know, in for 4 months to use your block of time, Megan, maybe you get an hour and a half of work done every night with a cup of tea instead of your show and a glass of wine. And maybe that makes your days less stressful. So like, I guess just again, for those of us who are routine oriented, it can be hard, but think of the blocks of time in your day that I'm sure you're being very productive and I'm sure you're like on roller skates all day and working and, you know, hustling all day. But maybe there's a shuffling of the blocks of time that could relieve some of that pressure. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And maybe you also just hold on to the stuff you really don't want to do. And then you do have the glass of wine.
Yeah.
And you do like the mindless tasks at the end of the day, but make it pleasurable. That is
yeah.
another little trick work at home moms, I think, often employ is to kind of group and batch the like monotonous or unpleasant stuff and then link it with something pleasant.
Yeah.
That is something I have definitely done over the years. And I also want to point out that this time is such a challenge, but there's also such a great opportunity here. This is unprecedented because everybody is in mm-hmm. the same boat as yeah. you. I mean, executives, upper management on down, everyone right now is having to grapple with how hard it is to balance life and kids and work all at once. And no one really is exempt. I mean, you almost can't buy your way out of this. So like, it almost doesn't matter how high up you are in the company. Like your boss is probably also dealing with disruption to their schedules. They're having to learn new things. Your team is probably also has people on it who have kids at home or maybe have other responsibilities that elderly parents are taking care of or pets that won't stop sleeping on their computers. There's like all kinds of funny memes going around about, you know, like the cats that won't yeah. stop climbing on people's computers. But like everyone's kind of in the same boat. So I think it's important to remember you don't have to do the same job that you were doing
yeah.
at the end of February.
Yeah.
You're doing a different job right now. And you don't have to do the same level of work you were doing in the office. And you also don't have to be the same level of mom that you would have been after 5 o'clock
Correct.
On a Tuesday or on the weekend a month ago. This is a very different scenario.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes. I have two more really quick things. One, I don't think Allison mentioned her partner or co-parent. If you have one who's supportive, you know, earlier and more often to ask for help or clear the air about what feels unequal, if it does feel unequal or what feels like, again, just like you might reshuffle your blocks of time, maybe you reshuffle the way that you co-parent or the way that you, you know, both work. So that would just, that's just one thing. And then my final tip, we've been, the kids and I and Brian have been journaling every night and we write down the best thing of the day and the worst thing of the day. And, but I think it would be really helpful to write down the things you got done in a given day, either work or personally, and just make it a quick and dirty list because we're so, as moms, we so focus on the things that remain yet to be done or the things we didn't get to or the things that we really didn't, you know, meet our standards for that day. But just keeping a log of the things you did do, I think because yeah. you are getting stuff done. It just feels terrible right now.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, should we move on?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So we have a question from Julie, and this one is not specific to COVID-19, but something that we get questions on quite a bit. So let's listen to Julie's question now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing all of your insights over the years. I have a question about siblings sharing a bedroom. Our house only has 2 bedrooms, so we knew that this was going to happen when we had our second. And our friends had said that their kids generally liked sharing a room, so we hoped for the best. But we just moved our 6-month-old daughter into the same room as our 2.5-year-old daughter, and it has resulted in multiple middle-of-the-night wakings where one screams at the top of her lungs and then wakes up the other. And we're just not really sure how to deal with that. So I'm wondering if you have any tips or insights for making it easier for kids to sleep in the same room, or any other considerations that maybe don't revolve around sleep that we just haven't encountered yet because our kids aren't old enough yet. So thank you again, and please stay healthy.
Okay, Julie. So both Megan and I have had kids share rooms, and we've talked about it on the podcast before. But the first thing that came to my mind when I listened to this is that 6 months and 2.5 is still really little. And I don't mean like too little, like you shouldn't have moved them in together, because that's, I think it can totally work. But it's really little to make a judgment call on whether this is like a good long-term plan or not a good long-term plan. Because at 6 months and 2.5, both kids are still working out their sleeping patterns. And when you described the like one waking the other up and screaming in the middle of the night, I was having like palpitations. Like sleep is hard enough with an infant yes. and a toddler, and then to put them in the same room. So I guess, first of all, to just validate that this is challenging, and lack of sleep is super hard for everyone. And I guess then my advice would be, is there something that would work in the short term so that everyone can get the rest they need? And if that looks like moving the baby back in with mom and dad or some other alternative solution, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have your kids share a room down the line. Cause I think there's so many different phases and so many great parts of kids sharing a room. And you might find that when they're 1 and 3, it looks totally different just 6 months from now, 4 months from now. I'm just going to keep using 4 months, Megan, as my, like the next block of
4 months. Yes,
4 months.
Things are going to be very different in 4 months, right? Yeah. I mean, I totally agree, Sarah. So nothing is set in stone. And what actually is funny is when I first read the write-up of this question, I read it as 6 years and 2.5. And I was like, oh, that kind of sounds hard. And then when I listened, I was like, oh, 6 months and 2.5. Like, that's the hardest, because you've got a 6-month-old baby is kind of coming out of what can sometimes be a bit of a honeymoon phase where they finally learn how to fall asleep at night. But then they like almost regress a little bit. There's mm-hmm. there's often that kind of going toward the second half of the first year. And then you've got a 2.5-year-old and all bets are off. Like they're still kind of a toddler. I mean, they're kind of coming out of that phase.
Toddlers regress a lot, actually, especially when they have a new sibling. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not like the way it's going to be forever. And I was just thinking about the many, many, many different arrangements we've had.
Musical
beds from having, you know, switching up which siblings share with which, putting the crib out into the living room or the dining room, putting slightly older kid on a sofa because they couldn't sleep in a room with anybody else, bringing them in with mom and dad. Like, we had people moving all around. And I just want to point out that it might seem unorthodox, and we have this very American idea about the fact that like kids are supposed to sleep in a child bedroom or a private separate bedroom, but that's kind of like a 20th century social construct. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not something that has been required by cultures throughout history in order to thrive, right? So it's not like your 6-month-old baby needs that right now, or that your 2.5-year-old needs that there to experience that like their entire lives to create these good sleep habits and to learn how to sleep in the same room with another person. And so I totally agree with Sarah. When they're 1 and 3, or maybe it takes longer and they're 2 and 4, or who knows what this could end up looking like. But if you can just have the flexibility to move them around in a way that makes sense to you now, I think you will find that they settle in at some point. And it's way better than everybody suffering now. And then like them not getting enough sleep and creating bad sleep habits around that. And Yeah. So like the goal is everyone sleeps.
Yes.
You know, especially number one goal.
Yes. Especially the short term goal.
Yeah.
Because you're in the thick of it right now. I thought I'd offer just a couple of things as you look ahead to when this is a more successful, quote unquote, successful arrangement. A couple of things. I think a 2.5 is maybe not quite ready, but by 3 years old, definitely ready to have some routines where they know what to do to not wake the baby. So like, I wouldn't expect your 2.5 year old to do this, but it won't be very long before you can maybe have a tiny little switch light by their bed. And maybe there's a rule about if you wake up and you need to go potty, or if you wake up and you need mommy and daddy, here's what we do. And then you practice and you train them and you say, you know, you turn on your little light and it's just a little light so it won't wake the baby. And then you tiptoe out, or you call on the monitor, whatever, like whatever your routine is. A 3-year-old can really help become responsible in that way. And it's amazing what little kids will do. Like we always talk about, Megan, like in preschool classes and stuff, when what you can train little kids to do if it's part of the routine. And so that could look right. like a lot of different things. They could have a little light and a little basket of books by their bed, but they can start to be responsible for not just intentionally waking the baby. Again, I think that's a longer term goal to shoot for, not necessarily something you would expect on day one. And then white noise is always a good friend of ours. White noise can buffer out a lot of even stuff across the room. And little things like that. I know families where mom or dad will lie and go to sleep even with one child in one room and the other parent in the other room. And while that sounds like not ideal for a partnership or a marriage, again, it's short term. So your solution might even look like one parent and a baby in one room and another parent and a toddler in the other room. And I know people who've done that for a few months at a time because it's the way that everybody gets the best sleep. And then guess what? You move on and you move into the next phase.
Absolutely. This is not, none of this is permanent, even though it may seem like that. And I think that it's really tempting to think that you can just start something and be like, okay, now we're setting it in stone and like it's cemented and this is how it's going to be moving forward. And that I think, especially with children who are about 2 years apart, like you're going to find those, sometimes they sync up and sometimes they just don't.
Did you ever have kids who slept through, did you have any of your boys who shared rooms who would sleep through anything? Because I have one sleeper who has slept through smoke alarms in their own bedroom. And it's just so funny that some kids remain light sleepers and some remain heavy sleepers and some kind of go through phases. But
I have two who are very heavy sleepers who really... they can sleep through themselves getting up and peeing on the wall. So they're such good sleepers that they don't even know they're doing that. So yeah, I had two of them and it was actually the two middle boys.
Okay.
So that I had like bookends of like more light sleepers.
Yeah.
So, but even that sometimes changed. So like the couple that really slept hard when they were older were not as good of sleepers when they were little.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I think that does take a little while to settle in. I'm just thinking it would be really lucky if you had like a baby, like if the younger one was just one of those super sound sleepers that just slept through anything. But it sounds like what's going on in Julie's house is a full blown, like waking each other.
Right.
Up. So exactly. That's gotta be.
Yeah. I've been through that too. That's no fun.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we are going to take a break and we've got some more questions to get to when we come back.
Okay, Sarah, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but do you consider yourself a rebel?
I do not, no. I am totally a rule follower. But I will say, I think a lot about raising my kids and especially my girls to question and challenge and push limits in ways that will really allow them to explore whatever dreams they have with confidence. And I'm really excited to welcome back our sponsor, Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, because their podcast is all about sharing stories of women who really did break the mold and went after their ambitions.
Yeah, this is so important, I think, to put stories of girls going after all kinds of different career paths, science, sports, medicine, art, activism, and politics, in front of our kids in a way that's entertaining, but also just makes it seem normal. That's what we're going for, right?
Exactly. So every episode of Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls tells the story of one awesome woman, and the stories are also narrated by other super inspiring women. Most of the episodes are around 20 minutes long or even a little less, so it's great for a car ride or a bedtime wind down, and the kids and I really enjoy them.
Check out Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls wherever you get your podcasts. We'll link to a couple of episodes we love in the show notes. And you can also just type in Rebel Girls into your favorite podcast player and start listening now. Go check it out. So, Sarah, by now, everyone knows that you and I are huge fans of Native deodorant, right?
Yes.
But recently, a mom I know asked for advice on a good deodorant option for her teenage son that would work and smell good. And the first brand I thought to recommend is Native. I love that the scents are unisex and not overwhelming and offensive like some men's deodorants I shall not name.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. I don't really want to think about your teenagers and my eventual teenagers smelling like they've been doused in cologne. So Native is such a great option for them as well as for mom and dad.
Yeah, we've both commented to each other, Sarah, about how Native really helped us make a change in our lives by making it easy to convert to a safe and natural product. It smells great, it's made of ingredients we feel good about, and it works.
Yeah, so I was also really excited to see that Native has relaunched its natural toothpaste line. Just like natural deodorants, natural toothpastes have a bad reputation for being kind of gritty and not foaming up the way you expect toothpaste to do. But Native's toothpastes use a special blend of naturally derived cleansers, flavors, and whiteners to deliver a great brushing experience and that clean mouth feel you're used to. I can't wait to try that.
And just like traditional toothpaste, Native toothpaste whitens teeth and freshens breath, and it does it without containing triclosan, sulfates, artificial preservatives, or parabens, which you do not want in your mouth. I am so excited to try the detoxifying charcoal with mint flavor because charcoal toothpastes are so hot right now.
Charcoal everything. Right? Well, there's no risk to try Native. They offer free shipping on every order, and Native offers 30-day free returns and exchanges in the USA. And we've got a great deal for you. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code MOMHOUR20 during checkout. Again, for 20% off your first purchase, it's nativedeodorant.com with the promo code MOMHOUR20.
Okay, so our next question comes from Andrea, and the question really centers around something a lot of us are experiencing right now, as does another question in this section, and it's about having to cancel things. And can I just really quickly just validate how disappointing it is to have to cancel things, even if they're small? And I've seen a lot of stuff on social media that I think is supposed to be making us feel like motivated or something and optimistic about like how much harder our grandparents had it and stuff because like, I don't know.
Yeah. That they had harder hardships and we get to sit on the couch.
Yeah, and all we have to do is stay in our house. And I don't find that sentiment to be particularly helpful because sometimes doing nothing is harder, feels harder or as hard in the moment as doing something A and B. It's not like I don't particularly want to play a game of like who has it harder.
I agree.
Olympics. To me, it's just very unhelpful.
And I think actually it does the opposite sometimes of what it means to. So I was thinking about this when we were talking in the first half of the show about the struggle of working, about it being difficult to work from home with two little kids. And then the counter argument that you see a lot is, well, yeah, you get to work from home and not everybody does. A lot of people are on the front lines and first responders are having to go out and leave their kids. And I think that's meant to create empathy or create a sense of purpose. But I think anytime that we're pitted against one another or it turns into this competition or contest, I think it actually does the opposite. It's somehow like doesn't foster that empathy. So
no,
I guess
it makes everybody defensive and going to the corner, right?
If everyone feels like they're allowed to have their feelings, whatever those feelings are, then we have our feelings and we can feel human and we can feel connected to other humans. And I think that puts us in a better position to support those who might be in a different position. So yes, 100%. I totally agree. You can be disappointed about missing a birthday party and at the same time have a larger perspective for what's going on in the world right now. Those two things aren't mutually exclusive, I don't think.
I totally agree. Okay, so that's a great setup for Andrea's question and then we will answer it.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. I am the mom of a 3-year-old boy, and I was just wondering if you have any advice for celebrating special days when you can't make them as special as you were hoping. My son is turning 3 on May 5th, and I was hoping to do a big trip and take him on a steam train, and of course, now that has to be canceled. I know that Clara's birthday was right at the beginning of all of this. So I thought maybe you guys had some advice on how to like make those days special when maybe you can't make as big a deal out of them as you were hoping. Thank you so much. I appreciate everything you guys do.
Okay. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for remembering that Clara's birthday was at the beginning of all this, because honestly, I feel like her birthday got completely lost this year.
It was the day that the world shut down.
Yeah, it truly was like the day that they announced the schools were closing. It was a day I remember very clearly the night before that because I had gone to a restaurant and I remember thinking it's so weird right now. I kind of think this is the last time I'll be doing this for a very long time. And then the next day, it truly was like everything just changed. And she turned 11 that day. And I still think of her as 10. Like to me, the birthday almost didn't even happen, which is really weird. But it was like so much was happening. And her dad and I are trying to like scramble to, you know, figure out, are we going to celebrate her birthday and how? We're not going anywhere. So how are we going to do that? And I just feel like in all the talk and things starting to shut down, it just got completely lost. So I just want to acknowledge that. Yeah, that is very true. And thank you for acknowledging that, because that meant something to me. Thank you. Also, we had to cancel our trip to California, which was supposed to start tomorrow. And that makes me really sad. And that was supposed to be her birthday gift. So the nice thing about her being 11 is that she can really deal with delayed gratification. And everything is so weird right now that they're almost like she almost didn't even notice her birthday got lost because everything is weird. And so we're just going to plan a redo later. But for a 3-year-old, you're in a bit of a different situation that is both opportunity and challenge. One of them is the 3-year-old has very simple needs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make this special for your 3-year-old no matter what you do. However, you are totally entitled to feeling disappointed for not being able to celebrate his birthday. But at the same time, you can also probably deal with some delayed gratification. So I almost feel like you can do both. You can figure out a way to celebrate his birthday on the actual day in a way that's going to feel really special to him on that day. And I know, Sarah, you're going to talk a little bit more about this, but I've seen all these cute stories about the way people are celebrating kids' birthdays with drive-by birthday wishes from, you know, people who don't get close, but just drive by and yell happy birthday or do something special in the yard or video conferencing. Or just keep it to your nuclear family. We've done that many times. And then maybe that allows you to go a little overboard with the theme or the cake or the gift. There might be some opportunity there to really kind of go the extra mile, especially if you're all kind of home anyway.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of time. Right.
Yeah. You've got the time and there's not a lot of extra other stuff happening that would distract you from that. But then you also have the opportunity in 3 or 4 or 5 or however many months that things go back to normal to then have a redo. And so maybe you can almost look at this as the year he gets 2 birthdays and put that like positive spin on it. But I would just remind you that a 3-year-old would probably be thrilled with like $5 worth of toys. It's really more about probably the expectations that you have and the hopes that you had and what you were looking forward to around this party. And maybe it's more a matter of just postponing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. We did get to go to a drive-by birthday for a neighbor who turned 8 last week, and everybody decorated their minivans or their SUVs or like hung balloons out the window or whatever we had on hand. No, you know, nobody went to the store for this. And we synced up our cars and we drove around the block and drove by, and I almost got teary, like looking at this little girl in her driveway with her mom and her brother and her grandma. And it was very sweet. Again, that was a very mom reaction that I found it poignant. The kids are just like, cool.
Cool. All right.
So I'm glad you made that distinction between processing this as a mom of a 3-year-old and the 3-year-old's perspective. Just a couple notes on gifts. I have really been trying to think about local businesses and small businesses. Etsy and Jane.com, which is an affiliate partner of ours, both of those put together like curate lists of makers and artisans, and they have toys and games on those sites. And then your local toy store, you can call and they might do a curbside pickup. Again, check what the recommendations are in your area. And obviously you have to make your own decisions on health and safety, but it might be an opportunity to shop differently.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you need to do Amazon, because that is what's easy for you, and that's what gets him the, you know, the PJ Masks like Lego set that he really wants, like I think that's fine. Right now I am totally doing a mix of Amazon and Target deliveries, and then also trying to think about ways to support local businesses. And that's just what I have. I find myself vacillating between the two, and that's what I have the headspace for right now. So that's just a note on shopping. Allegra is the end of April, which is just kind of a bummer, because by the end of April, we will have been in our house for 6 weeks by the time her birthday rolls around. And I don't think anything's going to have changed. So it's not only in the middle of shelter in place, stay at home, it's like 6 weeks in. So I'm already thinking about that. She'll be 12 And as we were actually planning to address this question, I had this thought, like, maybe this is the year everyone celebrates half birthdays. Like you said, like,
yes,
delayed gratification. But I don't know. I think that might be kind of fun. Like, I would totally throw a party for Allegra in October when she's 12 and a half. Or if she really wants to and it's sooner than that, like, who cares? But maybe half birthdays. Yeah. Let's make half birthdays a thing this year. Like, do-over birthdays. So for hers, I'm not sure what we'll do. 12 is kind of, like you said with Clara, it's kind of like there's advantages because they're a little older, but it's also kind of sad. 12 is such a, like, you know, go to the movies with your friends kind of tween age. And, you know, she will have been at home with her family for 6 weeks at that point. So, yeah, I'm thinking ahead to that one. And then we've got an early June birthday, and I don't want to speculate at this point. If you're listening
right. Well,
to
remember,
this,
I was throwing out the 4 month thing just so that I don't get, just so I don't set my expectations too high. And I'm sure that is, like, I'm something I think will probably have gone back to some semblance of something looking more like normal. But also, I mean, everyone says kids are resilient, and it's such a silly, yet totally real and true thing. But I would say even resilient isn't even the word that I'm thinking of now. It's adaptable. Like, the kids have already, just in 2 to 3 weeks, like, everything has changed. So adding one more change on top of all these other changes, it's really going to be okay. And I think giving them something to look forward to is fun. And I think giving them something, you know, just them knowing that we didn't just brush this under the rug. It's not like it just didn't happen. Yeah. It goes a long way.
Yeah.
So
I agree. Yeah. I agree. It's helping me to think about looking back at this, like, put myself 5 years or 10 years or 20 years in the future and look back at this time. And, you know, it will be a birthday that everybody will remember. Your 3-year-old might not remember their own, but you'll remember the way you celebrated. And so that, it's not ideal. It's not what you thought, but it's still a celebration of your child's third birthday, and it will be one for the memory books in its own way. So,
yeah, agreed.
Well, on that note, our next question is similar, and this comes from Vanessa, and she is a first-time pregnant mom who already listens to our podcast. I'm always so kind of touched and also surprised. You're just doing your homework so well, Vanessa.
Right.
She is going to have her baby, I think she said, in July. So let's listen to her question, which is kind of along these same lines.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. Loved your podcast. Started listening when I found out I was pregnant last year. So my question is, I'm currently 25 weeks pregnant at the time I'm recording this with my first. I'm due in July, but with the coronavirus pandemic happening, originally my baby shower that I've always envisioned was going to be mid-May. Now it's looking like it may be later or even no baby shower. Some friends have suggested doing a virtual shower, which I'm not sure if I'm into, just because it's not the typical baby shower I've always envisioned with my first child. So if you were in my shoes with pregnant with your first child during this time, what would you do about a baby shower? Thanks.
So, yeah, not the baby shower you were imagining, for sure. And I think it's totally important to acknowledge that that just stinks. I guess the first thing I thought of when listening to this is I would really try to stay open to the idea of something virtual, even though it doesn't feel fun. I can hear in her voice, it doesn't feel like what she wants. But for a couple of reasons. One, your friends and family may really want to find a way to make this special, and they really might get creative with it. I know, not that you have to do it for them, but I think we're all benefiting right now by getting creative with the internet and finding ways to, like, make these things possible virtually. So it might be a really positive and meaningful thing for the whole group to come together virtually, even if it's not your first choice. You also might get some gifts that you need. So I guess I know it's a mindset shift, but there can always be a sip and see, or a come and meet the baby, or some party with all of the in-person touches and decorations. That can always happen in 4 months or 6 months. But I don't think that means that you have to skip the virtual option. So I guess I would, from my vantage point, and you can take it or leave it, I would encourage you to stay open to letting them put on something virtual for you and just see where it goes.
I would totally agree. And, you know, Sarah, you said maybe this is the year for half birthdays. I'm going to say maybe this is the year for twofers.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this is the year everybody gets double of everything. So the thought that came to my mind is, yeah, plan two events, have that preview baby shower. You get to have some kind of celebration. Your friends are going to feel really good about it. And it's not going to be traditional, but it's going to be special in its own weird way. Like the first week we were all had the stay at home order. I went to a virtual birthday party and it was weird. But I remember thinking, this is kind of cool because I think the guy recorded it, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, cool.
And then had this, like, I think it went to like 1 a.m. So he had this sort of, you know, record of people popping in and out of a Zoom teleconference or video conference to talk about or to, you know, give him birthday wishes and chat and all that stuff. So I thought that was a weird but cool thing. And then later you can have a party with the baby and also let's just say, yes, you can get some of those gifts and supplies that you need right now. But then when the baby is here, you could do the baby meeting party. And I honestly think those have a ton of benefits. Like the baby photos are going to be adorable because you can include the baby in them, right? And you get to kill two birds with one stone because you can show off the baby to lots of people at once and get it kind of over with, which is sometimes a little stressful and challenging those first like 6 to 12 months after you have a baby and you don't want to have people in your house every weekend. And if that one is also a gift party of some sort, you'll have a better idea of what you need, how big your baby is and how fast he or she is growing, because that can sometimes create, like if you get a bunch of newborn clothes at your shower, you may find that your baby never wears any of them, as we've talked about before. So I do think that there is a way to kind of, I don't want to say milk it. I'm just saying the optimist in me wants to say, like, just go for all of it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the year of the twofer.
I agree. The year of the twofer. And I mean, I think this is similar to what I said in the previous question about the three-year-old's birthday party. But you are going to look back on, this is part of your pregnancy story and part of your birth story. And it's going to be crazy to look back on this time historically. There's so much that's going to come out of this. So I'm not trying to do the silver linings thing and tell you like, oh, there's a good part to this. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just saying that it, like it or not, it is a part of your baby's birth story and your pregnancy story. And it's not typical. It's unique. And so I think if, like, having been a mom for 12 years, like, looking back at my own baby shower pictures, like someday you will look back and be like, wow, that's what the world was like.
And
it's more of maybe an honoring or a respecting that. You don't have to like it. I'm not trying to like do the silver linings thing, but it's still part of your story. And I think honoring that and maybe coming to accept that might open up even some enjoyment in these parties.
Okay, so our next and final question is from Allison. And this one really isn't COVID-19 specific, but it's still, particularly if you were home right now at a time that you hadn't been, this topic, it's about naps. And it is something that I feel like is one of those just classic mom topics that, you know, we like, it doesn't matter what's happening around you. Naps and the dropping of naps will always be an issue. So let's listen to Allison's question.
Hey, Megan and Sarah. This is Allison. I've been listening for about 2.5 years, and I always look forward to podcast days with you guys. I've got a question I was hoping you might be able to help me with. I'm a mom of 2, a 3.5-year-old girl, and a 21-month-old boy. I stay home with both, and they're with me all day. In the last few months, my son has gone from 2 naps a day down to 1. My daughter does still lay down for rest time, where she does typically sleep a bit, but I know I'm lucky that's still happening and it won't be that way much longer. I did used to have some overlapping times with naps when he was a 2-nap schedule for my son, but now that he's down to 1 nap, there's really not too much of an overlap, and I find that I don't have real breaks during the day. I thought it would just take me a time to adjust to this new normal, but instead of adjusting, I seem to just be getting burned out by the end of the day. I'm really struggling with some things. Behavior issues and little annoyances all seem way more amplified and difficult to deal with, and I don't always deal with them well. I've lost my cool more times than I care to admit, and I sometimes just kind of find it hard to enjoy time with my kids. I know self-care is important, and I'm trying to find ways to focus on myself after they've gone to bed, but I find it just hard making it through the day without a break. Do you have any advice on how to kind of quickly recharge myself during the day when my kids are awake so I can avoid feeling so burnt out?
Well, first I have to point out the symmetry that this was not planned, but our first question and our last question today both come from Allison's. They both have to do with having like a toddler and a preschooler, a toddler and a baby. And in a way, they're like the mirror image of each other. So our first Allison is trying to work during quarantine with two littles. And our second Allison has been a stay-at-home mom from the beginning. And I think what's at the heart of this question is when naps have been your built-in time for rest or recharge or reset for a number of months or even years, and that goes away, that is like the rug getting pulled out from under you, because she's a stay-at-home mom, so she's been on with these babies.
Yeah.
And so I just really remember this. And I also had kids who napped. She said, so her 3.5-year-old, I think, is still resting, but not for long. And I totally had kids who napped up until around 3.5. And then you see that going away. And you've also worked so hard to like sync up a baby nap and a preschooler nap. It's like, that's really hard work. It takes like a year to get to that point.
Yes.
And you finally have it. And I think what I noticed is it was almost like a Pavlovian response. Like my brain knew when to go into rest time or me time or mom time, whatever you want to call it. When the babies were sleeping, I trained myself. You know, I had my snack or my computer or my book or whatever. And when that's taken away, it's feels like the rug's been, you know, taken out from under you. So I do have a couple specific thoughts. One is that you're really close at these ages to your kids starting to be able to play together for short bursts of time together. And every sibling pair is different. I remember, you know, about 1.5 and 3.5 or 2 and 4. I'm not saying like for hours they're going to play together and leave you alone, but you will start to see little pockets of time that's not nap time anymore. It's awake time, and yet they are playing and they don't need you. And it's amazing how it starts in 5 or 10 minute bursts and then it gets a little bit longer. So while you're in the beginning of that phase, I would just really encourage you to have a couple of ideas for things that you can do when that moment presents itself. And I was really bad at this because I worked during nap time and I had my things that I would do during nap time. If the kids were all of a sudden playing nicely together, it was like I didn't know what to do with myself. Like I didn't have what's the word that means like not relaxing, but like a recreation. I didn't have a recreational default. And so I would really encourage you to get a recreational default. And it could be something as simple as like a stack of magazines that are just for those little moments that you can open up and flip. Or if you're a crafter or a maker, having an embroidery or a knitting project that's right there that you can reach for, or having a book that's not like not a boring parenting book, but like a good book that's just for you. And I think this does two things. One, it keeps you off your phone from just scrolling, because we know like the kids start playing, we start scrolling, and all of a sudden they've played for 30 minutes and they didn't need you and you didn't do much but scroll. So it gives you a replacement activity for that. But it also trains your kids that mom sometimes just does things for her own enjoyment. And I can't tell you how valuable that is for kids to see and for you to practice. So I think maybe you might be at the end of naps, but you also might be at the beginning of having kids who play together or play independently. Maybe they're not playing together, but they are each doing their own thing. And so I would love to see you find your recreational, like your little, you know, like toddlers have like a basket for when you're nursing the baby. You need like your basket. You need your mom's fun
your busy
basket. Your busy basket.
Yeah.
And you need to challenge yourself to go to it when that moment presents itself, because otherwise, and I was guilty of this, you find yourself with those moments and you don't know what to do. And you just, you kind of feel like at loose ends. So I think it's about to be, it's about to get easier.
It is, but I think it's so funny, Sarah, that you mentioned at the beginning how you work so hard to get those naps lined up or whatever it is. And it's just a microcosm. It's just like a metaphor for parenthood in general, is that you're going to work really hard to get something to a bliss spot. And that's going to last like 3 months. And then you're going to have to work hard to get yourself to a new spot. Like that's just how it is. And that's just like the ongoing challenge. Yeah. I wanted to address the end of the day comment. And I think everything Sarah said is really smart. And I feel like you're the master of like dealing with nap transitions and things like that, Sarah. But I do want to talk about the end of the day thing, because to me, when my kids started to reduce or drop nap times during the day, I felt like I started running out of steam like 2 hours earlier than I would otherwise have. So usually I used to be able to sail. Like when I had a toddler who was sleeping like a 2 to 3 solid block of time during the day, and maybe even having another nap, you know, earlier in the day, I could sail right through bedtime and I was like cheerful, you know, when naps are abundant.
Yeah.
I felt I had abundant energy. And then when naps went away, that energy started scaling back and back and back to where it's 7 o'clock and I am super grumpy. So you may also need to adjust your expectations of yourself toward the end of the day. Maybe building some rest in, maybe just creating a more easygoing evening.
Yeah.
So that whatever it is you've been expecting of yourself to be able to do, you know, in that last little stretch, that last little like, little bit of time you have, maybe that goes away for a little while. Mm-hmm. Because what you don't want to do is have that feeling of dread starting at about 4, mm-hmm. that you know you're going into the rough time of the day, and then feel like you're just hanging on at the end of your rope for most of the second half of your day. You don't want that. So maybe figure out a way, whether it's like closing your eyes for 15 minutes, after dinner, whether it's maybe easing up on your expectations of yourself, if it's asking your spouse for more help, mm-hmm. If it's just like making like super streamlining, simplifying and streamlining your bedtime routine, which we've talked about fairly recently, I feel like, just how bedtime can look very different depending mm-hmm. on where you are in your life. Maybe that's also a way for you to just not feel quite so at loose ends.
Yeah.
About the fact that your daytimes are changing, because everything plays into everything.
Yeah. And I really experienced that as my kids started to go to bed later, because I just for years, I mean, a decade, I had set my energy tank to basically like expire at like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then what happened is my kids started to go to bed later and I found myself like antsy and grumpy from like you said, in that last couple hours of the day, because I had trained myself that I can't relax until they're all asleep. Well, that's not actually true. At the ages my kids are now, I could have a glass of wine or a mug of tea and put my feet up and read at 6:30 when they're all messing around after dinner. And then I could get right. my second wind and, you know, yeah, they're not in their rooms until later than it used to be. But just like Allison was saying, when you've planned your respite or your recharge time around a certain, you know, expectation and that changes, you have to find that somewhere else. And I think she's really smart to have realized that needs to happen. So,
yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And thank you to our listeners who sent in questions. Keep those questions coming and we will keep these types of episodes coming as well. Also, before we go, we just want to remind everybody to check out our sponsor, Dermatology. That's Dermatology spelled with no vowels, Dermtlgy, and the skincare starter bundle that they have put together for us. You can check that out at themomhour.com/skincare. Such a good deal for really great products, and they'll ship right to your door with free shipping. So you don't have to worry about leaving the house right now to take care of your skin.
Yeah, again, that's themomhour.com/skincare for a great deal with Dermatology. And we'll be back with you soon with another all new episode. Talk to you then.